Hello and welcome to Two Fat Expats, where we're all about packing as much into your expat life as you can. That's what we mean when we say fat. We mean full and overflowing. This expat podcast is listened to in over 160 countries and has a social media group with over 10,000 members. I'm Kirsty Rice, an Aussie expat based in Qatar, and each week I'm joined by Nikki Moffat, who's also an Aussie, and she's in Hamburg, Germany. Together we have 12 locations between us, which is a lot of shipping containers, packing tape, and never to be seen again refrigerator magnets. How are you, Nikki Moffat?
Well, happy friendiversary, Kirsty Rice.
I just saw that as well before we came online.
Facebook tells me it's our special day.
When did we become friends? Did it say when we, I guess that's when we became Facebook friends, which of course was much later than we became Twitter friends, wasn't it?
That's right. I don't know the answer to that, but I just wanted to, you know, give it a shout out. Anyway, that's pretty boring compared to the big news. I want to know, how was Helen's baby shower? How did it all go? Is there anything new that you learned?
Yes, I did. It was amazing. I have to say it was really, really good fun. Put a little bit of it on Instagram and Instagram stories. I should say we do have a Two Fat Expats Instagram. My Instagram is Shamozzle, which was my old Twitter handle from years ago, S-H-A-M-O-Z-A-L. But, yes, I'd put a lot of it on there. So it was just beautiful, basically. So Helen had a lot of girlfriends who all looked absolutely amazing.
Explain to me the outfits, because I saw some of the photos. Yeah, and I was thinking, wow, this is very well coordinated.
It was so well coordinated. I got the shock of my life, right? Because I guess from my own cultural background, baby shower, you would just go in what you'd wear, sort of, you know, to an afternoon tea or something.
Smart,
you know,
casual.
Yeah, smart casual. There you go. And so I was expecting smart casual, cakes and scones, you know, cups of tea and coffee, you know, that sort of thing, because that's my preconceived idea, right? But no, for Helen, who is Ethiopian, she walked out of her room wearing almost like a wedding dress, not as fluffy, but silk and wrap around and just, you know, beautiful. And she had a tiara and she had a necklace. And to me, we spent some time in Libya and there was a traditional sort of wedding jewelry in Libya, and I've got it in our house at the beach. I actually got it framed onto a piece of Libyan carpet, you know, in how it worked. But to me, it's sort of, there were hints of that, just that sort of traditional wear. But all of her girlfriends wore blue tops because they knew Helen was having a baby, and white jeans. And I said to them, so you guys obviously planned this out. Yeah, it wasn't a coincidence that they all did. And they said, oh, yeah, they'd been talking about it all week. They'd been talking about this baby shower and what they were going to wear and what Helen was going to wear. And, do you know, there was a whole level of excitement there. It was beautiful. Oh, and, of course, now that we've started, I'd just like to welcome everybody to the mosque. Every time, Nikki, it doesn't matter what time we start, I seem to be able to coordinate this. Yes, and Helen and her friends did a lot of the cooking. We did bits and pieces and decorations and whatever, but they did the two traditional Ethiopian breads, one which is almost looks cake-like and the other one which almost looks like a airy kind of pancakey thing, but it's quite sour, and I cannot pronounce the names of either of those breads, so I'm a major disappointment. I know.
So we're really not for anything on our pronunciation of baby shower goods.
We are, aren't we? And I did that whole thing where I said three times, now how do you say this bread? And then went, oh, God, no, I can't. But maybe someone else can ring in and tell us how that works. But, look, it was beautiful. It was very special for us we had our entire family here, so it meant that the girls and I went out shopping. We bought lots of decorations and we made lots of decorations where we couldn't find the things we wanted. So we bought ribbons and ribbons of baby sort of stuff that we cut up and sort of spread all over the table. And the girls put almost like those beanbag beans, you know, but they were coated blue and put them at the bottom of bottles with blue and white straws, and got some baby balloons, and we got a big basket of, you know, chocolates that were in blue and silver. And it was just a fantastic day. And what I loved was when, you know, it was all just normal chat and sitting around and having a drink, oh, we had a special Ethiopian beverage, which was a honey and lemon with a yeast in it, and it was absolutely beautiful. Really, really yummy. Oh,
you need to get Helen to get that out more often.
I know. And I do believe that we had it like it was made on the weekend and we had it right there and then. It sort of had a ginger beer kind of taste to it. I do believe that it is one of those concoctions that if you were to leave it to brew and brew and brew.
Oh.
Yes. So, but what was lovely was when we did the presents, and I have to say, Nikki, I did do a lot of tiptoeing. I wasn't the bossy kind of host that I normally would be because you're just not sure what's appropriate. Do you know what I mean? So it was weird to host something, but host on behalf of someone where you're thinking, do you open the presents as part of your experience or do you take them home and open them when you get home? Like, how does that work? And at which stage do we eat? And do we have the cake or do you take that beautiful cake home with you or do we all have a piece of that cake? Do you know, like, there's a lot of things where I was kind of waiting for others to lead the way, and I'm sure that others were kind of looking at me thinking, oh, I don't want to step on her toes, do you know? So there were moments of that. Anyway, I kind of said, oh, can we open the presents now? And we did. But what I loved was when, as each present was open, everybody clapped. You know, we all had to clap as it was opening and woo! So exciting. And then at the end, Arte, Helen's husband, he presented her with a bunch of flowers and gave her a kiss. And then we clapped the loudest we clapped ever. Do you know? Like, that was the most exciting. So it was really, really good and just so lovely to be a part of Helen's world.
Excellent.
So, Nikki, we're going to move on with our usual format this week. We break up the podcast into five topics, which are, of course,
geographically challenged, which is where we as expats can face situations, feelings, thoughts, and memories that are impacted by having lived and loved in more than one place for any period of time. We'll also cover expat relationships, which can be relationships within your own family, with your partner, your friends, colleagues, or anyone in your expat travels, really.
And we'll look at expat tech, where we look at the latest tech available to expats, and expat money, where we discuss money issues that are particularly relevant to expats.
And then we also always have location, 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 where we speak to an expat living somewhere in the world and we ask them the five fat plus questions.
Okay, so let's get started with geographically challenged. Now, Nikki, have you felt particularly challenged geographically this week?
Well, not especially, but I did just want to mention that this week I went to a concert. Mm-hmm. I went to U2.
I did see that on your Instagram story. You were having a great time.
Well, it was interesting because I had discussed with somebody before I went about going to a concert in Germany, and they were South African, and they were talking about how, you know, when you go to a concert in South Africa, it's almost like going to a rugby match. If anyone's been to a rugby match in South Africa, it's quite an event. You know, you have a braai in the back of the bucky before you go in and you sort of stand around, have a few drinks, get a bit merry.
Hold it. I need to go back and just unpack that just a little bit. A braai in the back of a bucky. Now, is that like in the, what we would say, the boot of a car?
Yeah, so a bucky is more like a ute, so a, you know, a four-wheel drive vehicle, usually a utility vehicle. Yeah. A braai in the back of the bucky where you sort of stand around, you have some drinks, you have maybe have a little barbecue, and you know, and basically you're in a jolly good mood. So by the time you get in, by the you sort of going into the concert, you sort of jolly, you're in the mood, you might be singing some songs, all that kind of stuff.
Yep, yep.
And she told me, it's not like that in Germany. I said, oh, well, I've never been. I'll be open to having a look. And it was very sedate. It was very ordered. Everyone was walking very quietly. Although there were, as in, you can in Germany, there's drinking. You're allowed to buy a drink and then drink as you walk. So there were little places along the way that were set up that were selling beers and that people could buy. And so people sort of walking along quietly and drinking a beer. And then when we got there, we all lined up very quietly to get in and to ask questions very politely. And then when we got inside, we went up and then everyone sat in their seats. And then they had said that there would be no opening act. So you two would just perform straight away.
Is that normal?
And they would come on. So you know what? It's such a long time since I've been to a concert. I feel like a really old, boring person. But most concerts I've been to, they have an opening act of some description. Yes. Yeah.
Even if you're young and at a concert now, there's an opening act. Yeah.
So the tickets were for 8 and, you know, Germans have got a word. It's called pünktlich and they love everyone to be on time all the time. So by about 8:15, 8:20, the crowd was getting a little bit restless and starting to sedate, and then they started some waves. They did waves and it went round and round and round, like 15 minutes of waves. No one stood up though. You just threw your arms up in your seat and there was no sound. You know, there's no like, whoa, when it comes past you.
No.
There's none of that. There was just like, throw your arms up, put them back down. Anyway, then you two came on and they did warm the crowd up. Their act is absolutely amazing. And I haven't seen them live for 20 years. And I could tell by the age of the people in the crowd that I hadn't seen them live for 20 years. But they just are amazing performers. And I really started loving U2 when I went to a U2 concert. I didn't like them before I went. So they really revved the crowd up. And they kept apologizing because it was their first time in Hamburg ever in Germany. So they've been to Germany lots of times, but they've never been to Hamburg. And so they said, you know, they kept apologizing for being late. And in the beginning, I couldn't work out whether it was, thank you for your patience. And I was wondering whether they were saying that because they were 20 minutes late to start or because they had, by the end I worked out because they hadn't actually been there for 33 years.
Got it. Oh, wow. Yeah, concerts are so different. I think, you know, in Qatar, obviously we don't get a lot of concerts, but things are definitely changing. When we first came here, there were only two people that came to Qatar, and that was Bryan Adams and Janet Jackson. And it was because they both had some sort of relationship with someone here in Qatar, you know, that got them through the door. Yeah. There was a particular shaker who just loved Bryan Adams, and so he was allowed to come. And Janet Jackson, of course, married a Qatari for a while. So,
oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, she did. And they went on to have a baby, and she was. Oh, look, I'm going to get this wrong, but she was either close to 50 or 50 when she had the child.
Yes, no, I do know that. I didn't realize her husband was Qatari.
Yes.
So you haven't been to a concert there?
I have not been to a concert here. Now, that's not saying there hasn't been concerts here because things are changing drastically. So there have been some much bigger concerts here.
Yeah. So Germany, not Germany, but Europe's kind of destination concerts, right? So we're in the line. Actually, I'm coming to you, Kirsty, in another geographically challenged moment from an apartment in Venice. We won't talk about that right now in case the internet falls down. But we were in the line yesterday at the airport and there was a guy in front of us and he was Australian and he was in Innsbruck. He'd been to the World Cycling Championships to volunteer for a week.
Oh, wow.
And then he'd been traveling around and he'd just come to Hamburg to see you too. And so I thought that was really it. Interesting. And we talked about that a bit. And then it reminded me that earlier in the week, I had seen that there was a bit of a destination concert event in Prague in that Shania Twain, talk about people from our 20s, had been in Prague. And so a lot of people had gone to Prague to watch Shania. So they'd flown in and were very disappointed in their concert experience. Did you see any of that online at all?
No, I didn't. So what happened at the Shania Twain concert? And I'm guessing predominantly this would be an American conversation about people that had gone to see her in Prague?
I've got no idea, but perhaps we could have dropped a dime to Sarah Derrick because she was at that concert, I noticed on her Instagram.
Was she really?
She was. But she, I didn't see her comment about this, but I did see quite a few people that I saw in different forums mention that they were very unhappy with the Prague crowd because when they were getting up to dance, that they kept being told to sit down. So it's true that different countries have different concert cultures and, you know, depending where you are and where you're from, you might feel differently when you're in a concert in a foreign location.
Absolutely. Like, and I would say, yeah, Australian concerts probably err on the side of the South African, you know, meet first, have a few drinks, go in, dance your pants off, you know, get rowdy. If there was a wave, there would be a roar as the wave went past. You know, I think in my Australian sort of crowd culture is very much, you know, how many plastic beer cups can we merge in one line and hold up in a way? You know,
yes.
You can't let anyone sort of sit still for too long without there being some sort of drama. Not violent, but just rowdy, raucous fun. Okay, so probably just before we move along, wrapping up geographically challenged, if you have a geographically challenged moment that you would like to share, please come and leave us a message.
Absolutely. So leave us a message. And how do you do that? By going to our Too Fat website, by going to twofatexpats.com, and you just press on the microphone button and it's easy as leaving a voicemail.
Yes, it is. And I will never giggle at you again for saying Too Fat website expert. Okay, expat relationships. Nikki, I wanted to talk about an anonymous post that we had on the Two Fat Expats Facebook page this week. And I've been wanting to talk about this sort of thing for ages, and so this post was just perfect in that we had a member who was feeling enormous guilt about the fact that her mother was ill and being hospitalized. And it wasn't just the guilt of being away from home, it was the guilt that she knew that two of her siblings were having to pick up the slack. And she'd posted about asking people whether they'd been in that same situation and sort of what had they done to work around it, and any advice that people had to give them on when your parent is ill and you maybe can't get us home as often as you'd like to, and the effect that it has on your siblings. And I just thought it was a really, really good conversation, and there was a lot of really fantastic advice that was offered.
There was, and this is something that I have been through when my mother was sick. I lived on a different continent. My brother lived in a different state. So we were both sort of not on hand at any given time. There was an emergency. Luckily for us, Mum had an amazing support network of friends and other family close by. I mean, her sister also lived in Canada, so we were all really far away. But I read it and I thought there were excellent points. It was a great conversation because it is a really difficult thing, and it comes up time and time again because we're the sandwich generation. So our parents are getting older, but we had children later, so we still have sort of younger children. So if our children were older, it's a different situation as to how often we can sort of drop and go, or even have the ability with time take out the financial side of it.
On that point, Nikki, about drop and go, like there were a lot of people within that thread. Well, not a lot. There were a few people within that thread that offered the advice of, hey, you should just cut everything and get home. And I understood their point where they were saying, you know, if anything was to happen, you'll never get that time again, or you should go home now. It's better to go now than to go for a funeral. You know, all those things that sentimentally make a lot of sense that you want to be there. But the thing is, there's the practicality too. I'm sure that the woman who'd left the message, if she had the ability to go home, would have gone home. Like, not everybody has that ability to do so. They may have a job that they've already taken their holidays.
They may be married to a citizen of another country and living in a third country. Like, there's all sorts of reasons that you can't necessarily go home. And, you know, it's something that you think about, and it's not something that people don't think about. And it's something people ask you, well, aren't you coming home now? Because you must be coming home now because of this. You know, it's not, people are put in very difficult positions. I just feel for anyone in that position because it is very complex and difficult. Yes. And taking up on what Anne-Marie said last week in terms of one of the things that she's learned from living an expat life is that families make different things work, different relationships, things in marriages, different things. So, and I think that's a good rule of thumb, I guess, for all expat life is that you know, it's not A, B, C plus D, E, et cetera. It's a whole lot of different moving parts and balls and everything.
And, you know, people have a really unrealistic expectation too of expats, I think. So, for instance, so say I lived in, you know, so say my parents lived in Adelaide and I chose to move to Melbourne. If they were to get drastically ill or hospitalised or whatever and I was working in Melbourne, I don't think anyone would say, well, hey, aren't you going to leave Melbourne and come back and live in Adelaide? Like, yes. they would just think, well, you live away, so that's fine. Whereas when you live overseas, suddenly people say, oh, well, I guess you'll be coming home now. It is seen in such a different light of what people's expectations are of you from living in a different country. I just thought maybe we could go through a little bit of advice of if you can't get home and you are stuck, which was the woman's question of what could you do. There were people that said, you know, you be the one that orders the food, the flowers, you know, or you be the one that maybe spends the money that you would have spent on an airfare. Perhaps you're putting that towards it, making phone calls to medical providers, doing other sorts of organisation that you can do remotely. And someone else said, you know, offer to pay for the siblings' flights or set up a food delivery, talk to doctors, etc., so that you can pitch in that way. There was one woman that had been in the same situation with two sisters at home, and she said she calls both of them, even though sometimes one bitches about the other. But she says she never gives instruction. She feels that it's just not right for her to do so from far away, which I think is also really good advice. If you're not there doing the hard yards, it's probably best you probably don't start telling people, you know, what they need to do more or less.
Yeah, and you're there to listen to them. So you're there for them to be able to share their feelings with and to listen, which maybe they can't do with other people because they can't say, I feel this is a very big burden, you know, because other people judge them. But you're their family and you're not there to judge them. You're there just to be.
Yeah, I agree. I did look up sort of strategies for siblings because I thought, you know, surely there are people that have done this really well before. It's all back to that same thing about communication. But I was thinking, because Nikki, I had a personal one on the weekend where we have the National Broadband Network in Australia that's been rolling out across the country. And of course, you know, my parents are now both 70 and, you know, so they're retired and that they live out of town. And of course, the NBN's been rolled out. And I have this situation on the weekend where my mum sort of sends me a message via Facebook saying, I've completely lost my voice because she had been sick during the week. I've completely lost my voice. The NBN people have come. We've got our, you know, sort of iPads working and we've got television, but we don't have a landline and I can't work out how to connect the computer. And of course, I can't ring her to talk to walk her through it because she's got no voice. And she can't talk to me and she's got no landline. Luckily, she's got a mobile phone, although she doesn't have an iPhone. She has a smartphone. She has a really shitty mobile phone. But I sort of had that moment where, what did I do? I rang my sister and, you know, 45 minutes away, but just sort of said to her, oh, you know, do you know mum's in this situation, blah, 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 blah. And I said, I'm pretty sure, well, it was actually my 14-year-old son who said, Granny needs an Ethernet cable because her computer's so old it's not going to pick up the Wi-Fi on its own. She needs to put the Ethernet cable in the back of the modem and then put the other bit in her computer. And I was like, oh, okay. So I sort of told my sister, sent a note to Granny, did all of that. But it was that kind of thing, you know, where your instant urge is, can't bear to think of my mother sick at home with no voice, not being able to fix this. And, you know, I wish I could just drive over there and do it. So I was thinking, you know, this is going to happen with my sister and I more and more in that she's 45 minutes away and we have aging parents. So So strategies for siblings. One was, you know, talk to your parents, and that it's really crucial that you communicate with your parents and understand their needs, because seniors get fiercely protective of their independence and they may even refuse help. Because, Nikki, I don't know about you in your 40s now thinking about whether you'd want your kids to help you, but I'm sitting here in my 40s going, oh, you know, I really wouldn't expect any help from my kids.
No, and I don't think you do necessarily. And the older you get, the more set you get in your ideas and your ways. I don't know. Any of us in our 40s might realize that. The older you get, the more you realize how much you don't know, but you also think that what you do know is right. And so, so you need to stick to that. But yes, absolutely. It's very difficult. So I think the tips that you looked into were great, because talking to your parents is very important. And talking to siblings.
Yes. And the other big one was doing your homework about the types of services that are available to your parents, because this is a big one for expats. We leave the country and we completely have no idea about what's available in the community because we're not there. We're not living it. We're not seeing it. So I know only through having a friend who that is her role in our community at home. That's the service. That's her job. She looks at services for the elderly and in-home services. So I know that there are all sorts of things seniors get in Australia if they ask for them. And particularly, I have a father who wears two hearing aids and is quite deaf. So he is eligible for certain services that we are not milking that we should be. And you might find that there are services for your parents that you can organize for them, you know, like a gardener or a cleaner or a, you know, some sort of physical therapy or whatever. You need to, if you're going to be proactive about it, is maybe start looking into what your home country provides for elderly people and talk to your peers and ask them. Plan ahead. Once you've identified your parents' needs and explored what the available resources are, you can start planning on how you're going to share the load with your siblings. And, you know, also be aware that those needs are going to change. And it's, you know, once again, back to communication. You've got to sit down, talk as a family about what you see happening. And this is going to be my little plan for when I get home, you know, around Christmas. And maybe that's something that all of us should be thinking about, sort of if we are getting together towards the end of the year, is you look at what does the year ahead look like for your entire family? What's everybody planning on doing? What would they like to do? Whatever, so that you can communicate those things.
Yeah, and I think that's the most important thing, because often you don't talk about those things unless something happens, and that's a really stressful time to talk about it, and that's when you're going to generate a lot of difficult conversations. Whereas if you just, like anything, if you have a planning conversation, it's like having a will or having insurance, you plan about it and then everyone knows. So if something happens, you know what you want to do. It doesn't mean you can't change, but it means everyone's got a starting point. I think that's good.
Exactly. All right, Nikki, we had a fabulous review this week from, now I'm pretty sure this isn't her real name, Mrs. C852 from
Hong
Kong.
Well, the 852, that's the area code for Hong Kong on the phone.
Oh, how cool. Okay. Oh, thank you for that. So Mrs. C852 from Hong Kong said, I absolutely love these ladies and I honestly feel like they're all like my long lost best friends. I only recently discovered these podcasts, which I tend to listen to when I exercise each morning. It's made my daily workout a joy and something I can't wait to get to each day. They're intelligent and articulate, but also hilariously funny. They constantly have me cracking up as an Aussie expat mum of teenagers who's been living abroad for a long time. I identify so much of what they say and have to say, thank you so much, fatties. You make me so happy. Oh,
thank you.
C852, you make us very happy. That's lovely. If anyone else would like to review us, the easiest way to do it is to head over to your Apple Podcast now. Is that what I'm going to, Nikki?
Well, that's what the people on the iPhones have. They have the Apple Podcast app. That's
right. And that's how you do it. Because you are not an Apple person, you're a Samsung person. So what do you do when you review?
I go to my laptop, which is an Apple, and I go to iTunes and do it there.
Ah, so does that mean if you have a Samsung, you can't review? Surely not.
No, of course. Yeah, no. So any app you have, any podcast app you have, you're able to submit a review in.
Fantastic. All right. So technically, expat. Oh, I saw this thinking on our Facebook group. Did you put this, the radio station website?
Yeah. So I that's where I saw it too, but I wanted to pop it into Technically Expat this week because I thought it was excellent. And I went down a wormhole and I saw it and I sort of scrolled past it and I didn't go back. And then I was reviewing the post later in the day and I saw that there'd been a lot of comments, and the comments were, oh, thank you for this. This is amazing. I spent so much time. I thought, okay, I need to click on this. I need to check it out. So I did check it out and it is unbelievable. So it's Google. It's almost like Google Earth. So you go to this website, it's a big picture of the globe and you spin it any way you want and you zoom in and then you find the what's playing right then on the local radio stations when you click on each radio station is a little dot. So you have to get very close to see sort of the particular area you're looking at, and you can listen to radio stations all over the world. It's a wormhole.
I know. I did it as well. And I particularly loved going to country Australian radio stations, but then doing the same in the States as well. But yeah, it is a total wormhole being able to just, I guess it's that old style scrolling through, you know, scrolling through your dial, turning your dial on your old AM, FM radio, wasn't it? But this is the modern way, except you've got the entire planet.
We'll definitely put the link in the show notes because people who haven't done it will want to do it. I have one more quick thing I want to mention with technical stuff. Kirstie, how many tabs you got open right now? Just on the offhand.
Three.
Three. You're a tabless person. You don't like, I always have people come to my computer and say, how can you find anything? You've got like 40 tabs open.
Yeah.
I like to operate with a lot of tabs, but my family are highly critical of that.
Yes. Can't stand so, it. Oh, yeah, you can't stand it. Oh my God. No. No.
Well, anyway, so you and I've finally found something that we're the polar opposite on. Sorry, but I do always have a lot of tabs open. So what I found this week was an amazing thing, and it's an extension for Google Chrome and for Firefox. It's called OneTab. So it's just a little extension on your menu bar. So when you've got so many tabs open, you don't know whether you're coming or going, you just press the little OneTab thing. All your tabs go away and they appear in a single tab, like a drop-down list. Oh, it's so amazing.
See,
now you would have no need of that. But I know that there are people that are listening that will think that that is a great idea.
I wonder whether what maybe I do more as sort of an Apple person is if I have tabs open that I can't release. See, I just think people who have lots and lots of tabs open, they just can't get their shit together, you know, to actually close down a job.
Sure.
Is that sure? Fair? Like, it's like, oh, no. I might want that. I'll just leave it there. But what I do is just flick them into my reading list. So what I do have is exactly.
Because you use Safari, you don't use Google Chrome.
Yeah. And so I think it is basically the same thing as OneTab in that if I can't let it go, if I'm like, oh, I might want that, and what if I can't find it? I'll just flick it into my reading list, and then every now and again I go back and clear up my reading list so that it's not completely jam-packed. So, yeah, I guess that's kind of the same. So I think
it's kind of the same, but then I wouldn't be so critical of me and my tabs and not being able to finish things. I think we should move on. New topic. If anyone does have a tech issue and they want to know about it, or they've got a really good tip for us, please don't forget to come tell us about it in the Facebook group, or you can also send us a message. But I imagine that if you're listening to this podcast, you are in our Facebook group, which is Two Fat Expats on Facebook. We have over 10,000 members and you really can find out anything in the world if you go there.
Yes. So this week, expat money. Nikki. This is a can of worms. I'm about to talk about expat wheels and it's going to be big. All right. So we had a question on the Two Fat Expats Facebook group that you just mentioned asking, it was a very particular question asking about Australian wheels. and a whole conversation ensued about international wills and wills in different countries and whatever. So, Nikki, I guess you and I both are of the same opinion with wills. There is no one size fits all answer to the problem, and that each individual's circumstances are unique and will require their own sort of solutions. You cannot be an American, an Australian, a Brit, a South African, or wherever you are from, an Italian, a German, whatever. You are going to have specific wills in your country. Now, probate law varies greatly from country to country, and it's very likely that as an expat, wherever you are, that your assets will be frozen upon your death, but any debts will continue to accumulate, which will really leave your loved ones in a very difficult circumstance. So I think we had someone that said within the group that they'd just had an international will done in Australia, and that once it was filed that it covered all their assets in all countries. And they mentioned something called the International Will Convention. Now, Nikki, you and I were a little dubious of the International Will Convention because we both went to look it up and we couldn't find it.
Independently, on our own tabs.
Yes. And the whole situations with wills makes me very nervous. Now, how I have handled it as an expat living in the Middle East, because I have spoken about this in the past with Sarah, and I spoke about it.
Yep, you did an episode.
Yeah, in case of emergency or something, I think we called it. And that was when Sarah and I both sort of admitted that we'd had these dreadful conversations with our partners about if anything were to happen, the first place you should go is the bank and get your money out, because of exactly that, that all your assets will be frozen, your bank accounts will be frozen, and you'll have no chance of getting access to that money until everything's done and dusted. Nikki, I don't know what your situation is in Germany, what you do. Like I said, it's completely unique to you.
Yeah. So, you know, we have a house in the States, and when we need to, we transfer money in and out of there. We have accounts in Australia and Germany, but we don't transfer a lot of money out of Germany because we live there. But it just reminded me. So, say something terrible was to happen. When my mum passed away, her accounts were immediately frozen, which is fine. We knew that was going to happen in advance, and she had planned for that. So she had transferred money out to us so that we could deal with particular things that she wanted done. But so what happens if you have a joint account in Qatar, obviously, but in Australia, accounts are frozen on notification of death. So I guess, as you said, in every country that will happen. So you just have to know if you have a joint account, what that will mean as well.
Yes. Yes. That's a really, really good point. And we have a will in Australia, you know, for if anything was to happen to both of us and what we would do and what that would look like. You can have a will here in the Middle East as well that I believe must be in Arabic. And, of course, you get into all sorts of different situations in the Middle East when you're talking about Sharia law.
Yeah.
So I think, Nikki, you and I are going to continue to investigate this, and we will, you know, we've been working in the background a little bit with putting together maybe a little sort of expat newsletter or PDF for all that sort of information where it's too much to put in a podcast and it needs to go into some sort of PDF for people, and whether that's a magazine style or a newsletter style, but we'll be working on that in the next couple of weeks. The only thing, you know, that did cross my mind is when this whole conversation was happening was, you know, I've been saying, you know, almost sort of how clever we are that if anything was to happen, you know, you'd siphon the money out and it'd go elsewhere and whatever. But that whole end of service benefit as well, because...
Yeah, that was a very good point that was raised in the group, yeah.
Yeah, because we've been here for 9 years, and you do start to accumulate for your service that you're in a country. And, you know, my husband would be eligible for a large end of service benefit, and I would have to work out, you know, how that was going to get to me and all the rest of it, because I can't imagine they will send it to another country. I imagine it would have to go into a bank locally. So I think that's something I need to investigate as well and maybe ask about. And maybe if there's anyone listening that has happened to you or a friend and you want to elaborate and let us tell us your stories of what happened, I would love to hear them of how you dealt with that. So, yes, either hop onto the website, twofatexpats.com, and leave us a message or shoot us an email. Or come onto the Facebook page.
Because you know who did leave us a message, Kirsty?
Who left us a message, Nikki?
Marnie left us a message.
Oh.
So I don't know if you've heard Marnie's message. Have you heard Marnie's message?
Do I need to go into Slack now and listen to it?
Yes, you do.
Hi, Two Fat and Expat. It's Marnie here, currently living in Singapore. Just wanted to say I'm so grateful for your 100 episodes. I've been listening from the start. I really loved the 100th episode and listening back to those highlights. It was really so fun and such great memories. Also, just wanted to comment on the Lee Sales 2 podcast that you listened to and that you commented on. And I thought that the one with Mia Friedman was much more like a chat with friends, whereas Richard was definitely interviewing her for live radio to go out to the masses. So that's what I felt was the difference, just in the way they chatted. But both had fantastic insight, and I can't wait to read the book. Thanks so much for continuing to be in podcast every week. I really enjoy it. Bye.
Oh, Marnie, you are bang on with the whole
She nailed it.
She nailed it. I love Marnie. Love, love, love. Thank you. I'm really glad she left that message. That 100th episode has had some really great feedback.
It has. My husband also listened to the 100th episode.
Really?
And he came home and he said to me, hey, you know, Sarah, she was really funny. You've really got to pull your socks up and try it. I said, okay, I'm on it. I'm on it.
Nothing like the vote of confidence from your husband is there. Like, thanks, Darls. That's not going
to Thanks for being supportive and listening to the episode. Yeah. On the other hand, probably do without that feedback.
Okay, location, location, location. Where'd we go this week?
This week we went, it's up to Kay, and we went to Kigali. Jessica is from New York City and she's living in Kigali, and I just love her story as I fall in love with everybody I talk to. So they moved for her husband's job. He works in strategy consulting in the development space. I don't really know what that means, so I just verbatim copied that. But Jessica is a clinical psychologist specializing in trauma and the intersection of trauma and violence in mental health. And before they were married, they lived in South Africa in Johannesburg, and she found that she couldn't work so officially because of visa issues. So she volunteered in environments that she was qualified in, which she found very fulfilling and excellent for her career. Then she decided to head back to New York City before her boyfriend did or slash husband. And then she looked in specifically into qualifications that would be recognized internationally. And she did research on what would be most transferable for her career. So look, she's a smart bunny. She got in early. And she worked it all out.
Wow.
And it was really good teamwork because her husband stayed on in New York for the 4 years so she could finish her qualifications. So he made sacrifices, and then now they've set off back into the world and they went to Rwanda. And when she moved there, there was a group of expats and locals who'd been there for a long time, who started an independent psychology center in Kigali, and she was able to join and establish a private practice and get her own visa independent of her husband.
Oh, wow.
So amazing. Jessica's just amazing on the career front and the thinking ahead and the planning and the teamwork with her husband. But also, Jessica is the person that in the Facebook group stepped up when someone was looking for a birthday cake in Kigali and gave the bakery recommendation.
I love
so she's
that.
A lady of many talents.
Oh, she is. Okay, I'll have a listen. I'll press play now.
On a scale of 1 to 10, what's your current level of in love with Kigali?
Is one in love or is one I hate it?
Yes, the second one. When is I hate it? Yes.
Huh, I would say probably a 7.
You've been there for 12 months. So when did you reach a 7?
Probably... it's just gradual. Because I admit I started pretty low coming from New York City. Probably I got around there around March or May. Yeah.
Great. And what's your best local find?
Goodness. I guess so. There's a little bookstore and cafe called Nzora Cafe, and the cafe owner does a Friday evening artisanal cocktail and tasting platter. And
oh my goodness, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's so great. And so whenever I'm able to go there, which frankly is not often, because what with having a toddler and I'm not on the nanny train quite yet. But whenever I do go, it does make me feel like I'm touching a part of my old life with a lovely cocktail and some, you know, just really creative little jelly jams and cheeses and things.
That is a great local tip. That's excellent. We have to make sure we keep that. What is it about Kigali that drives you crazy?
The driving. Oh my God. They have for, so it's still a mystery. The last theory that I've heard is that they had these opposite rules. Like there are all these traffic circles. And so in Kigali, is guess informally, the people who are coming into the circle have the right of way.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the people in the going around the circle have to give way, have to yield to the people coming into the circle. But like no one, half the people don't follow that rule. And then there are all these motorbikes going all around, just careening and lorries and things. So it's just kind of like you just breathe and go slowly and just hope for the best.
Fantastic. What about, what's one place you'd love to live?
Someplace in Europe. Really just any place with the cobbled streets and a nice plot with the trees and the yummy cocktails and tasting platters. It's yummy cocktails and tasting platters. That's what I would like. Plus trees. Okay. Anywhere that can do that for me.
That sounds pretty good. That sounds like you're pretty open. So that's
yeah,
good.
I am. If people could drive sensically, that would be a plus.
What's the best piece of advice you've ever been given about your expat life or this way of living?
Oh, it was that woman that I met who had moved from Mumbai to Chicago and then New York. And she said to just be open and to just tell people, everyone, just tell people what you love to do and what you're good at, and just be open to doing anything. And that's advice that I have really lived by. And I think it's done me quite well.
And what is the biggest lesson that you think you've learned?
I think, not to take myself seriously.
And do you think that's something you used to do?
I think that, that there is some sense, I'm the only member of my family who has done anything like this. And I think many in my family, they have lives that where everything is controlled. And they feel good about that. Like, to create a life where you can predict, where you feel like you can predict everything and everything is planned out and you're following all the rules and things make sense. And as long as you stay within the lines that everything is fine and you feel happy and at peace. And so then I think it took me quite a while to say, oh no, there's a that's not the only way to live one's life. And there's actually a lot of fun and adventure and crazy things that can, wild things that can happen once you let go of that.
True. And the other thing we've just started asking people is, mm-hmm. So on the podcast, we give recommendations on books and movies and podcasts that we listen to or we're watching or reading. So do you have anything that you're particularly loving right now that you'd want to think that our listeners might enjoy?
Oh my God, I'm so boring. So my work, as you can imagine, is really quite dramatic and intense. And when I'm relaxing, so reading a book or watching a movie, I choose the most boring thing. I love nature documentaries as long as they're not too upsetting, or, you know, historical fiction that's just very silly. I get a lot of my adrenaline rush and, you know, drama in the work that I do.
Yeah, I can imagine that. So that is totally fine.
Okay, yeah, it's kind of funny. I am really obsessed with this documentary about beavers.
Oh, what's it called?
PBS. It's called Leave It to Beavers, about how beavers are just going to save the world. It's hilarious. It's totally boring, but I absolutely love it because they're so cute and they just do their little thing and they do so much good for everybody else just doing their cute little fuzzy thing, and I can just go right to sleep thinking about beavers.
Oh my God, Jessica has the cutest voice I've ever heard, doesn't she?
I think she'd be very reassuring if you're speaking to her in her professional capacity. Yeah,
she would. She would. That was really interesting. I really enjoyed it and loved that she is sitting around watching docos of beavers. I'm sure there's someone with a much filthier mind than myself that would have gone to a completely different place when she said how handy the beavers were. But yeah, that was really, really interesting. I'd love to go to Rwanda.
Well, so would I on a Friday night now and go to the artisanal.
Yeah. I know. Like, isn't it? This is why it's so important to do these weekly interviews around the world, because I think Rwanda and you're taken to a completely different space. You know, I always think about the movie Hotel Rwanda, and so I'm probably thinking about all the terrible
terrible
things that happened. Yeah, and it's all a little bit different. I must say my girlfriend Bon went to Rwanda after she'd been to Uganda to go and see the gorillas in the jungle.
Yeah.
So I probably have a little bit more of an updated idea, but it's on my list. That is definitely something I would love to do. All right, Nikki, we're on to that segment where we look at what we're reading and what we're watching and what we're listening to. I thought, a really interesting article that was in the Sydney Morning Herald. It was originally in the New York Times, but it's a book that Steve Jobs' first daughter, Lisa, has written. Do you know anything about her?
I do know a little bit about her. I know that she was born before she wasn't married, so he was having a relationship with someone, and they had a baby, and it was a bit contentious for a while. That's kind of what I know about it.
Yeah, he refuted that she was his baby, and then he still didn't pay the child support when the DNA test proved that she was his. But then they kind of went on to have this relationship. I think Lisa Brennan Jobs's mother was actually his childhood sweetheart, like his girlfriend from university and school. But it was just a really, it was a fascinating insight in that she's now married. She's 40. She has her own child. And she's written this book. She kind of changed publishers halfway through because she felt she was really being pushed to sort of get it out by one of the big publishing companies. And so she went to a much smaller one. The book's called Small Fry. But I just thought it was very interesting in this particular time of when we're looking at Me Too and, you know, I'm not saying in any way that he was a sexual predator, but he definitely may have been perceived as a bully. And I did watch the Ashton Kutcher
Jobs, yes.
The movie. I think it was just called Jobs. And that kind of hinted all the way through that he was this eccentric character that was incredibly driven, that maybe he wasn't quite as warm and fuzzy as, you know, he had maybe been portrayed to be.
I'm not sure he's ever been portrayed to be warm and fuzzy apart from Apple, their marketing image.
Yes, that's what I mean.
I think many people who are driven and creative and incredibly talented are often forgiven for some of their
bad behavior.
Yes.
And
I think that maybe moving forward in our new world, hopefully, that won't always come as quickly. Because a lot of it has always been, it's a male-driven, patriarchal-dominated, oh, I don't want to go down the rabbit hole. But, you know, I think that in after this movement, this is another part of saying, you know, that's not necessarily okay just to be a dick because of that.
Yeah. All right. So, but if you are interested in this story, you can find it. We'll put the link on our website under this episode and you can find it there. Nikki, what have you been watching on the telly?
Well, Kirsty, on your recommendation some time ago, I started a show called The Bachelor Australia, which I had never watched before, but it had the badger, the honey badger. So I got right into it And then sort of I dropped away at the end when I thought, oh, well, I can see where this is going, as per usual. And then the outcome, the finale, the uproar, and it's just so,
we should put a great big fat spoiler alert that if you have not watched the last episode of The Bachelor in Australia, please just turn us off and fast forward 5 minutes because we are going to talk about what happened, right?
So what happened was he chose no one. So he got to the end, he had the two girls, and then he chose neither of them. Now, let's be honest, and everyone thought that was shocking. And it was terrible and devastating. But let's be honest, that's what everybody says. The minute after the episode's over, everyone said, well, they shouldn't have really chosen anyone. I mean, what sort of environment is this to fall in love? Are you really going to find a long-term partner? Yada, 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 yada. So to me, that was the most fascinating part, the fact that everybody said how terrible it was. But in fact, Kirsty, I did some investigation. So throughout the Bachelor history, so the Bachelor in the US, this is based on the US one. I didn't have Australian stats, but I assume it's not dissimilar. The Bachelor's been airing for 22 seasons since 2002.
Oh, my gosh, in America.
In America, since 2002. Only one couple from the Bachelor show is still together. However, meanwhile, out of 14 seasons of the Bachelorette, which is where the girl does the choosing, of the 14 seasons, seven of the couples are still together. So what does that I don't know. What does that tell you, Kirsty? Not so, I'm just pointing to statistics.
That is really interesting. Now, obviously in Australia there's nowhere near 22 seasons. I don't know. See, I was one of those people. I'm not a – the only sort of reality TV that I watch previously to watching The Bachelor is Survivor. I love Survivor. I could wang on about that for another 10 minutes if you like, but we won't. So I was very anti The Bachelor. I thought it was terrible for – if you were a feminist, I thought it was just really trashy, terrible TV. I couldn't see it. And from what I could see, the people that liked The Bachelor were watching it because they were just laughing at these women, because it really is a terrible premise. My mother-in-law was here when we were watching it, and she was horrified because she was just like, oh my gosh, what he's doing to these women. This is just terrible, like really horrifying. When you've got someone sitting with you telling you constantly, you're like reminded constantly that, yes, this is terrible. But you're like, yeah, but I just can't stop watching it.
It's like a car crash. You can't look away. And then you get on someone's team. You're like your team Cass or your team Brittany or your team somebody. Yes.
So what I will say about the Honey Badger, and we should probably to explain to people out of Australia, he's called the Honey Badger because he was a rugby player that became quite famous for his post-game sort of quips and conversations, because he speaks in this very laconic Australian way, and he called himself the Honey Badger, and so he became the Badgerler in Australia. But what I think is interesting, Nikki, because that's why wrap-ups are always good to do like a few days later, because you've got to you've got to get your head through it. So immediately after he did it, I felt sorry for him, right? So we get down, we had this amazing scenario where we're down to the final four. One of them is a woman who is so desperately in love with him because she actually has met him in a previous life, knows all about him, is friends of friends, lives in the same suburb, goes to the same gym, and she was mocked senselessly the entire series because she was so obviously in love with him, and it was very sad. So she gets knocked out first. The third one running, she pulls herself out of the game, and she's the one that everyone just assumed he was going to pick. But she suddenly realized that he isn't being very committal, that when she's really pushing for an answer, she's not getting it. And as a viewer, I'm watching that going, yeah, but he can't, because this is not the season finale. This is the night before the season finale, and he can't tell you now that he likes you, because what happens in the next show? Do you know, like what happens in the next episode?
Yes, so, the producers aren't going to let that happen.
Yeah, the producers are not going to let him tell you that he likes you when there's still another episode to go. So when she quit and said, I'm out of here because you can't tell me, I immediately said to my entire family who were watching it, oh my God, he's not going to pick the other two. He actually likes her. She's the one he likes. Like this can't happen. She's stuffed it all up. I was wrong, but this is what I was thinking at the time. And I was saying to my husband, is it possible he could not pick the other two and then get on a plane and fly to her and say, I got it wrong. I really liked you. That's how sure I was that he really liked that one.
Because
he was different with her, and I know I'm not the only one that thought it because I've seen it in every post-bachelor interview. Everybody has said he looked at her differently. He did everything with her differently. There was something far more with those two. But anyway, so then we have the final night where he's down to the final two and he picks neither of them, and we see him devastated and crumpled over and, it looking like he was a mess and emotionally a mess. And bizarrely, you could also see that his family could tell that he was not in a good place as well, that he couldn't pick either. But so my initial thing was he's done the right thing. He's been a good person because he has said, why go out with you now, do 3 months of publicity and then break up with you, which is what the majority of people
everybody
do,
does. Right? It's what everybody does.
Everybody does it. Although you can't say that about Australia because we do have a couple that are married and have gone on to have a baby in Australia. We haven't. And I
was that I, a bachelor or a bachelorette couple?
No, it was a bachelor.
Okay.
Yeah. So there are a couple that have stayed. I think there's two that have stayed together, but one of them very successfully and then has gone on to have a baby, Snez and Sam. Anyway, what I then started to think after I got past that first day was this guy is the guy that so many single women complain about. This is the guy who goes out with you for a few months and everything seems to be going really, really well, but he just can't quite commit. And when you push and say, what are we going to call this or what kind of is this, he does a honey badger where he's happy to roll around on the grass and kiss you and go out on the boat and not jump out of the aeroplane because that was when we really saw that he was really scared of heights. But all of those things, but he just couldn't get it together. And I thought the telling sign was when he did an interview just before he left the country to escape, because that's what he's done. And his final line to the interviewer was, if I saw the girls, I'd just like them to know that, you know, they should come and say hi and I'll buy them a drink and, you know, we'll just move on.
Yeah. So this is the thing where you recruit from, right? So the last two ones in Australia have been celebrities. So Sophie Monk, who was a pop yes. star, actress, model, etc. She picked someone, but then that didn't work out in the end. And then this guy, so they've gone almost for celebrities. And I read another article that said that The Bachelor this season has been for blokes. It hasn't been for women. So usually yes. they want women, but this season has been for blokes because he's got all this Aussie-ness that he talks about and he's a rugby player and all this kind of stuff. And they've been targeting the wrong demographic and they're wondering if it's all just fallen apart.
I watched the final four women all be interviewed and they were devastated. They were actually truly devastated. They all cried. They all talked about it, sort of this embarrassment and how they kind of feel like a bit of a joke. I mean, they all were, I think, genuinely there to meet a bloke. And because, yes, there are lots of people that go on The Bachelor to promote their business or to get themselves, some sort of social media handle or, like to do that. But they always weed those ones out as the show goes on and they pick the ones that are desperately falling in love and will say all the things they want them to say and do all the things they want them to do. And there was one particular woman who they just pushed, the producers just pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed for her to lay her heart on the line more, that she wasn't giving enough, that she needed to really let him know how she felt. And what for? Like it was just awful and excruciating to watch at the end. And I watched the final interviews with them and I just thought, no, I can't watch this anymore. This is not cool what it does to people. So I think my bachelor days are over.
Okay. Perhaps we should talk about podcasts then.
Okay, podcasts. I have been listening to Zigzag, which I used to listen to a podcast called Note to Self.
Yes.
Which was a public radio podcast with Manoush Zamarodi or Zamarodi. And it kind of just stopped. And then it really disappeared off my radar. And then at a dinner on the weekend, someone was telling me about this great podcast called Zigzag. And, of course, Manoush, there she is. So she's gone out on her own with the producer that she worked with on Note to Self, Jen Poyant, and they are starting their own sort of podcast called Zigzag. And it's been really, really interesting because it's kind of, well, it is very similar to Startup in that they are looking for funding.
Yes, I love
it. Yes. Have you been listening to it as well?
I only listened to it after I saw it on the show notes here, but I was on a flight yesterday, so I could listen to a few episodes on the way. And I relate exactly to what you say. It's like Startup. It's like Startup for women, which when you think about it, it's perfect because all the people that have started media companies and gone out, you know, Crooked Media, Gimlet, everything, I've loved their stories. I've loved listening to the podcast, but it's all men and that's fine. Men are good. I like men, but this just feels so much more relatable because it's women and they talk about women things. And it doesn't mean that men wouldn't be interested in listening, but I'm really loving it. And I'm also loving finding out what blockchain is.
I didn't know anything about blockchain before I started listening to this. And now I'm actually quite fascinated with it. And I think that's been my favorite bit about it is the learning about blockchain, learning about where cryptocurrency and whatever it all fits into that. I love with this podcast kind of the despair between the two of them. I think what I really enjoy with this is that it's two women that they talk about motherhood as well and sort of those thoughts that are going through the back of their mind. And I guess too, Nikki, is that you and I have a lot of these sort of similar conversations.
We do. Like
we talk about our expat group and the community and the authenticity of it and how you want to do really good, strong things. And I just really, really have enjoyed listening to these women. And I love Manoush. I always did. And it's so good to sort of hear a bit more of her and sort of see what they're doing.
Yeah, and I love the insight you get into the production side of it. So the fact that they were there together at Note to Self and they left together, they left their public radio together. I really like that side of it because it really shows the relationship. So you mostly hear Manoush and she's doing all the narrating, but you know that there is this really deep connection and this other side to it. It's really a team that gets it done.
Yeah. No, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. Okay, what else have you been listening to?
I don't know if we should try anything else because we've been having some internet problems and we might not be able to get it done. So I think we should maybe wrap it up and say sayonara or ciao ciao to Venice for this week and hope that we can just get it up together.
I agree that we should wrap it up. Could you just please explain to everybody where you are right now and what your situation is right now while we're recording?
Okay, so while we're recording right now, I am in a canal front apartment in Venice, which is awesome. But I am in the very back room because our apartment is on the Grand Canal and we can open all the windows and you can look at the Instagram and I'll put some on twofatexpats.com Instagram as well. And it is absolutely amazing. I found it online and it's a winner. You know, sometimes you book something online and you think, when you get there, not the same as the photos, totally the same as the photos.
And how many people could sleep in the place that you're in?
Okay, you can sleep six people. So there's two fold-out couches, which are in the front part of the house, two double fold-out couches, and then there's a bedroom at the back where I am, which is deep in the cavernous part, and it's got a beautiful, lovely, large bed and a door that closes. Yay.
Oh, fantastic. And I have seen the pictures, and it really is. You are literally right out on the canal. You sit at the window and watch all those boats go past. It looks amazing.
And we are less than three minute walk from the Rialto Bridge, which is one of the more famous bridges in Venice. So we're really right in the heart of, although my husband and I went out yesterday, we walked to a supermarket and went and sat in a bar and had a drink and the kids were here. And we came back. They said, we shut the curtains. We were sick of the people taking photos of us through the window. And I said, they're not taking photos of you. I said, they are. They're videoing the whole thing. I said, but what they're doing is they're on a boat and they're videoing just going down the canal. And they said, well, they're yelling out at us and waving at us. I said, be more friendly.
Your kids have been in Germany for too long.
That's right. But it's been amazing. And I will share some snippets on the Two Fat Expats Instagram stories as well, because I just can't believe it is like a picture book or a movie.
Oh, well, thank you for interrupting your holiday to do the podcast with us. It's been very
good. Wouldn't miss it. It's one of my favorite parts of the week.
Okay, I will talk to you next week.
Okay, I'll talk to you then. Bye.